was patiently erasing and recording the wrong episodes after you had proved my point wrong. It wasn't like I'd let it go. Oh, 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 oh. I just wanted to catch the last laugh on this show.
Don't let me down. Recording in progress.
One of my favorite songs. Let's listen to this for a minute. Group called Erasure from back in the 80s. All right, 2 minutes. Dad hated this music.
I can see.
All right, just give me a 2 count, 5 count.
5.
Yep. Turn all my stuff off, and then we'll get going. All right, here we go.
Hello, and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
This is John S. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz, and welcome to DH Unplugged. Give us a date. Give us a time.
It is July 28th,
2026. We're here.
I think it's 2026 still.
It is.
It's a long week.
It's a long week. It's a long year. It's been hell. It's been hell. And I want to welcome you. And obviously, I know it's a really hard time to be doing anything, but maybe it's a bit cathartic. Maybe it's a bit healing. Maybe it's a bit somehow doing something besides getting into your own head and thinking about all the bad things. And for those of you who don't know, for whatever reason you don't know, John C. Dvorak passed away peacefully at his home last week. He was on the couch with Mimi. They were watching, what were they watching?
NCIS.
NCIS, which would make anybody want to just, you know.
Yeah.
What?
Recent seasons.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he had that heart trouble many months ago. He had that repaired and he had that healed and he was on the road to recovery.
Yeah, he was doing great. He was strong. He was active. The last show he did for No Agenda, you could hear it. He's like, so caught us all by surprise.
Yep, yep. So we're going to do a little bit of a tribute today and talk with JC, as they call him, which yep. I don't understand why it's not JS, but we think we went into that. But we'll talk about that in a minute because we're going to talk about a little bit about the life in the Dvorak household growing up.
Yep.
We're going to talk about a little tribute that I did over on... I put it up on Twitter and a few other places that I want you to hear if you haven't heard it. Plus, we'll talk about the things we do on the show, which talk about finance and investments and all that stuff. So I'll mention, first of all, there is a No Agenda DH Unplug meetup on the 88, which was a very famous number. I think that's was your mom and dad's anniversary.
That's correct. It's also the founding year, founding day of my company.
Oh, there you go. Well, 88 at 3:33 in the afternoon. Another no agenda reference there of 33 in Fort Lauderdale. There's information on the DH Unplugged website. You can find more there. And we're going to be there, and we're going to have a bunch of people. I will be there, and I think Adam's even going to do a guest shot from Texas. He'll do a virtual, and that is also the day of your dad's funeral a few hours later. So we're going to remember John and tribute John and definitely throw some back for John and remember all of that. We're going to talk about the winner today also of the SpaceX Close to the Pin. Kind of a funny – actually, do not – leave this show until you see this or hear this, because it's kind of a weird situation, as you would think it is to be. Like, I did have ants in my house last night, by the way.
No, the synchronicity right now is out of control. He's wandering around going like, oh, I didn't know you could do all mess with all this stuff.
Yep. Yep. There was one ant and I stepped on it and I'm like, oh crap. I stepped on John.
So I said, you got reincarnated as an ant. That's a little,
yeah, that'd be bad. Yeah. So anyway, it's going to be at 3:33 p.m. Information. Go over to dhunplugged.com. On the top right, there's a little link there, and you'll see where the information is on the meetup and the tribute to John C. Dvorak on the 8th. Hopefully, anybody who's in the vicinity of Fort Lauderdale, that means all the way up the coast on the east side, even the west side of town. When I say the west side, I'm talking Naples, Fort Myers, Miami, then north to West Palm, and even further, come down for the day. I think it would be only fitting to do so and meet your other fellow people that are listeners and No Agenda E's and DH Unpluggers, I guess we'll call them. So we're going to talk about the markets. Again, back to SpaceX. Kind of feels a bit like a rug pull.
I mean, they were kind of, it was kind of being teased by Musk as a rug pull a little bit.
Yeah.
Given that he's often bragged about how good he is about like finance engineering. On top of it, there's a lot of promises that SpaceX has to fulfill to match their valuation. Like
enormous. Like they got to go to Mars. Yeah.
Well, they got to go to Mars. They got to get the data centers in the space to work right.
Right.
So that they aren't just, one-offs that fall out after 6 months. They need to get Grok to be up to parity with OpenAI and Anthropic. Mm-hmm. They need to get the robotaxi play to work.
Which, by the way, we'll talk about that in a minute. I want to come back to that robotaxi discussion, because what was interesting is Musk has a constant giant carrot in the front of investors. And that's why the stock really held on for so long, right? The 420 number that was way back, the numbers about robotaxi and then about SpaceX and maybe buying Tesla, from the proceeds of SpaceX, all these kind of things were this continual carrot. And now all of a sudden the big one that everybody seemed to be holding on to, which was this idea of a robotaxi and being in the trillions of dollars, the Cathie Wood discussion, et cetera. It's also all of a sudden gone to the back seat of the discussion, which I find, we'll talk about that in a second, but I find that kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Semiconductors now in a bear market, down 25% from their high. Most of semiconductors getting smashed. We saw SK Hynix come out with earnings tonight, missed earnings pretty bad, but that stock's been beaten up ever since. Another rug pull. They put themselves on the American markets in an ADR where Americans could trade them. And ever since that happened, it's down like 30%. So, and NASDAQ 100 is in an official correction as well. So I think maybe let's just, if we can just take a moment for those of you that didn't hear, my tribute, I'm going to play it right now, and then we'll come back, and I want to talk about life growing up in the world of Dvorakville as a kid.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine saying these words today, but today we're remembering my dear friend, we're honoring my longtime podcast partner, John C. Dvorak. You know, John's passing is a tremendous loss for the entire podcasting and technology community. There's no question about that, because for decades and decades and decades, he informed, he entertained, he challenged, and often delighted audiences about all his great information, knowledge, and way of being. He was a man with sharp intellect, independent thinking. He was unmistakable in his sense of humor. sometimes dry, but a great sense of humor. He never hesitated to question anything about anything, and especially about conventional wisdom. We know that from his time on the show DH Unplugged and No Agenda and all the times on TV and other podcasts he's done over his career. He did so with style. He did so with grace. He did so with a sense of humor, and that was entirely all his own. For me, the loss is, it's deeply personal. I mean, John was my friend. He's my co-host for 18 plus years with energy and insight and information and countless memorable experiences and times where we talked about things that maybe weren't that interesting, but he made it interesting. The conversations we had each and every episode was unbelievable. And we didn't always agree on anything. No, we didn't. In fact, a lot of times we disagreed. But in fact, over the years, we came closer to understanding what each other had and the unique ability that he had to put it all in perspective and to create a better understanding for all of us. He made our audiences smarter and friendships richer. And Tuesday nights are never going to be the same, ever. Every Tuesday night for the rest of my life, I'm going to remember that, oh, it's 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. I got to be on show and on live with John right now. The conversations we had, the laughs we had, the debates, and that familiar voice are things that I'm going to miss more than words. I'm sure you are as well. But while there's a void that can never be filled, we're going to continue to find ways to remember John and beyond what just life has, the impact that he had on all of us. We're going to move forward because that's what he would have wanted. I'm sure of that. He believed in looking ahead. He did. And staying engaged and continuing the conversation. He leaves behind an incredible legacy of family, who I consider part of, and I'm honored to be a part of. And much more than just behind the microphone. He's inspired generations of listeners, technology buffs, creators, and thinkers to ask questions, to wonder, to think independently, and never be afraid to speak what they think. He's going to be missed by many. I know. I can't even begin to tell you. I'm kind of numb to this, and I'm tingling because the thought of not being able to talk to him is, it's a big hole in my heart, in my life. He's going to be remembered by all of who knew him, and I miss him. Rest in peace, John. Thank you for your friendship and for sharing your remarkable gifts with me and all of us. We'll miss you.
Yeah, that's well, something I it was right that I think it was the day I found out, and yeah. It's terrible. You know, I knew your dad 18 years, and actually, you know how many times I said, why does he want to talk to me all the time? I was always like, what does he find so freaking interesting about talking to me? It's seriously,
his love language was like being critical and like grousing.
Yeah.
But that didn't indicate his actual opinions about you.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a grouser. he was curmudgeonly.
Yes.
You know, so let me read a few things off. Let me just go through. This is not all. I tried to gather. Listen, I had knee surgery just a few days ago, so I'm a little bit batty and loopy right now. But I did pull a bunch of things that people wrote me and emails and sent in. So let me just kind of buzz through these if I can. We're not going to do a 7-hour thing like was movingly like No Agenda. That was unbelievable. That was, and people were losing their voices. It was like a Jerry Lewis telethon, you guys, you know, for 2 days.
Yeah, I know. I was there. I was rotating with it. I don't have enough water to do that today anyway. My throat is still tired from Sunday.
Yeah, let me tell you. Let me just read these off real quickly. Thank you for everybody who wrote in. If I did not get your name, if I do not have you on here, and you did write in, you did send something, forgive me. We're doing our best here to kind of put this all together. And You know, a lot of people also wrote in, said, please don't put, you know, this separate, private, don't put this on the air. But here we go. Helen Trejo, on behalf of David Arlenes, thank you, John. Rest in peace, and Andrew. Jesse Anderson, thank you, John. Thank you and John for a fantastic weekly show. I'll miss John and hope the best for you, Andrew. Richard Gerhardt, I'll miss you, JCD. God bless you, John C. Dvorak, his family, and his friends. Jojo Rizzuto, my deepest condolences to Andrew and the Dvorak family. From John, I have an egg cookbook. Look out, heaven, Jojo. Vincent Shaw sends his regards and condolences. Thomas Starkweather sent me a beautiful note reminding me of a bunch of things we did over the years and things I forgot about. And he sends his condolences. Jack Connors, JCD, will be missed. Thanks for the years of entertainment. Chris Ebert, I've been listening to you and John for years. I'm deeply saddened to hear of his passing, and I'm thankful to both of you for the news, insights, education, and entertainment you provided all that to me. Lauren Gerstle, she said, just a little note to send condolences about John C. Dvorak. I've listened to No Agenda for years and come to really care for him. I can imagine that it has been hard to lose him as a friend and coworker. That's all. Take care. Caleb Niffen, he writes, I'm very sorry to hear about the passing of John C. Dvorak. I first listened to No Agenda in 2008, 2009 when I was in college. I came back in 2015. After graduating, I fell off, but I was taught to question everything. John instilled that into many of us. That got me thinking about one of the last questions asked on DH Unplugged. What will happen with the data centers or power brought online if all the AI fails? And he went to his whole really interesting discussion about desalinization. Mark Schwerdeson, he says, please extend my sympathy to you and John's family. He'll be missed and will be missed on your podcast for sure. You can always count on John's input for kind of being the old crank skeptic on most ideas, and it was always refreshing to hear that different opinion. His stories about the beginning of technology and beginning of Microsoft and Apple were always a pleasure to listen to. Kevin and Jill. Jill and I wanted to offer our condolences on the loss of your podcasting partner and friend. You're in our thoughts and prayers. He will be greatly missed with deep sympathy. Adam Des Moines. Enjoyed your stories on No Agenda about John. I met him one time in Mississippi, and he was like, he was on the show. Cranky, and like he was somewhere else to be while he was here. He was not paying attention, it seems. He informed me about the California Zephyr on the show back in 2018. I was in Denver, took the California Zephyr, LOL, loved all the tips. Greg Lampert, I'm saddened by John's passing. Longtime DH Unplugged and No Agenda listener. They'll miss hearing his voice. He was one of a kind. Gone, but never forgotten. Rest in peace, JCD. Michael Cisco, thanks for your thank you for your memoriam that you sent me. Noel Richmond, Neil Larian, thank you all for your thoughts, your prayers, your well wishes, and everything that you did there. So very nice, very nice. You got to admit, the outpouring has been—I don't want to say surprising and minimize it, but surprising.
It's been a lot. Like it was. Everyone was so quiet for the past, N years. It would have been less of a surprise if people were more engaging in the last 15 years. Not to summon him and to complain through me, basically. Right.
Pretty unbelievable. So let's just take a minute. And I think listeners are interested in this. And how's your mom doing? How's your sisters doing?
It depends on the day. So some days are like Friday was really hard. So, kind of to bleed into the next topic as well. Like for the past, pretty much after I got back from college, I was living in his house for a year or so before jumping into software.
Mm-hmm.
And when we left the house, my wife and I were doing dinners, or she was my fiance at the time. We were doing dinners with him like every night because, you know, we're in his house. And so when we left, we ended up setting up a weekly dinner on Fridays. And we've been doing that pretty much consistently with only like missing a few weeks a year. And so for the past like a good 17, 18 years to age myself, now I'm not going to be employable. Great. Anyway, for the past, decade or more, we've been doing a dinner every Friday. And last Friday was really hard because it was, we didn't have dinner.
Right.
Like my mom is down from Washington, she's joining us. One of my sisters available, she's joining us every Friday. And so it was just very, it was hard last Friday. And then Sunday took a toll on us because we did, 8 hours of reading condolences.
That was hard. People were getting punchy after a while. I heard that. It was difficult. It was difficult to listen to emotionally, but also it was very clear that besides the emotions these guys had, there's a lot of text. A lot of text.
Yes, a lot of text.
Amazing.
Thankfully, we're a sort of a vaudeville family, and we can all talk to the mic. And so it worked out for delivery, so we weren't just sobbing. Instead, we were just signaling each other and being like, "Okay, you do it now."
And you know what? Brennan, I was really surprised. If you probably may have heard some feedback, I sent this in to Jay. I said, Brennan's voice is like an audiobook, dude. He has a great tempo. I never knew that, really. I never heard him on a microphone before. But what a great tempo. And I said, literally, if I'm going to do an audiobook, he's going to read
Great.
it.
And so anyway, so it's been tough. It's super tough. Like we're also having to deal with the fact that he had a complicated technological setup. By sticking to analog and stuff, he never really went to the cloud. And so he had his own mail server, like it was there's a lot that's sort of like archaeological and trying to debug and sort of a little bit of Indiana Jones, kind of sneak through the traps. Not, we don't know if he has dead man switches yet. We'll find out. And so, yeah, it's been sort of like going back and forth about
Wow.
that.
Wow. So, just tell me this, that he was a writer. I think we may have touched on this, you and I, once before, but he was a writer for years on various shows. Hung out with some of the big names. What was it like kind of growing up in House Dvorak?
So it was funny. So even at a young age, I would have people go like kneel down and be like, "Your dad is famous?" And I had no idea how to respond to that. I still don't know how to respond to that. But it would also be funny because then I would be asked by my dad, like, "You know who that was?" And I was like, And it's like Steve Jobs. No, it's just like these wild characters that were just kind of like in the circle. I don't think that was Steve Jobs in that scene. I think somebody else. But it was somebody else on
Larry, it
stage.
could have been Larry Ellison. He talked about him that he
Could have
knew
been.
him. Yep.
But it was like basically they would have these dinners and I'd be dragged along sometimes because they didn't have like a babysitter. And there would be who now I recognize as, oh, I should have gotten some photos. I could have gotten, like this. It's like the Terence Tao photo with like these genius mathematicians. And I didn't get that. Instead, I just sort of looked on it as a sort of oddity. When I was older, I started to realize, whoa, that's actually really weird. That's quite strange. Strange as a child to have,
Right.
these billionaires. And then when I enter tech, I end up having a lot of friends that are in that sort of group. And I guess I was trained to not give a shit. And so they are very relaxed around me because they know I'm not going to like beg for money from them. I'm going to be like, whatever. Like, show me the wine menu.
So, it's funny because he was also early in on TV and technology, and he had all sorts of gadgetry. Were you, as a youngster, like really interested in the gadgetry that he would test out and bring home?
So we would have these boxes and boxes of review objects. So this gave me the ability to a fun little treasure hunt on the internet is that I was one of the youngest 3D graphics artists because I ended up getting Kai the 3D Bryce 3D or whatever it's called, Kai Power Tools and these different
Sure. Oh my
neat
gosh,
3D
Kai
stuff.
Power Tools. That's a blast from the past.
And so I was playing with them when I was like 7, and making like graphics and stuff and getting on like a promo for their product. And so there was a lot of stuff like that. There was a video toaster we had, and so I was making like videography with like camcorders and stuff because I had the technology, which of course now homeschoolers that are around today have Blender and way more powerful tools, and it's not that unique, but in the early 90s it was like a very
Sure.
strange thing for a kid to be involved in.
Right.
And so having this sort of like surplus of computers where I'd have hand-me-down Macs and Apples and a Cyrix computer, that was a very unusual thing, and it gave me sort of a head start on being involved with tech to the point where I tried to avoid tech at first. I was a business analyst, going towards like data science and like computational linguistics, trying to learn how to get a computer to do like go academic, basically. And I was kind of dragged into software, back into tech.
Not the worst thing. And then you have the background from the engineering side, so it's not terrible. Worked out.
It worked out great. It paid the bills.
Right.
It does. But I did kind of like avoid the heritage.
Any crazy stories that you could think of from back in the days when he was doing either Tech TV, Cranky Geeks? I mean, Leo Laporte was always a big, that's where I met your dad, by the way, was on Twitter. I was on Twitter. I think he was on the show with me.
Yeah.
And I flew out there to Petaluma and I met him, and that's, he and I, you know, started the love affair from that moment. And then he, of course, either he pissed off Leo pissed off him, or they pissed off each other or whatever. I bet your dad was probably just playing your dad, and that somehow got under Leo's skin.
No, there was some bad beef between the two of them that was brought on by the change in atmosphere that occurred in this country. But it's not really the venue best to deal into that one.
Right.
but the wild stories would be, that's a tricky one. Cause it's like, and I suspect like celebrity kids have the same story where they're just sort of like, oh yeah, I guess my parent is, I don't know, some famous name. But from the perspective of being in the family, it's just sort of a thing he does.
Yeah.
Instead of a thing he is. And so he ended up having like he had a radio show. When I was younger and I beat like Super Mario World, Super Mario World. He actually ended up playing like the ending sequence because I recorded it for him and he played it on air as like a thing. But I didn't listen to the radio because it was like in the morning.
Right.
And so it was like this, like, oh yeah, he has a radio show. I guess that's important in some way. I should remember that so I don't sound like an idiot at dinner. But like, it didn't really connect the dots. Like, it wasn't really until pretty much No Agenda and the meetups that I was like, oh, he has an audience. He has these people.
Yep.
But that was the way the whole time. So when he was doing the columns, which was a huge part of my childhood, was he was writing, he had a radio show doing columns and then showing up on like CNET and other things to talk about video games, where I briefly would sometimes watch it and go, hey, wait a minute, that's the talking about points my brother and I brought up to him. He didn't play this video game.
Right.
We did. We're not getting paid. You know, like, what's going on? And so there was this it's just sort of an eerie oddity to it. It was, it just took a very long time to realize it.
And then, by the way, meanwhile, the juxtaposition there is, you know, Mimi is, I don't see her as tech oriented at all. I mean, she's writing books on eggs. You know, she's running if I'm not mistaken, she had a little restaurant or something, or deli for a while. There's a whole different side of the family.
Well, it kind of. So her, she was actually in tech before my dad was.
Huh.
And so she was in a software distribution industry, competing against like Microsoft before Microsoft was Microsoft. And they like crossed paths. They were distributing for Microsoft, I believe. And so she was in originally like banking, technical side of banking, and then in software industry, and then comedy. And so the tables when I was growing up were comedians who I'd later recognized were famous. But like way later, way after the point where it was relevant to know.
Yeah.
And then these tech figures that were showing up, and then occasionally people who are important in the wine and restaurant business. But again, you know, it's really hard as a 12-year-old to capitalize on your parents' like amazing network.
Right.
Instead, you get offered these deals where you have like the CEO at Intel being like, "Hey, do you want to do a summer school?" Because you're a programmer, and 13-year-old me is like, no, that sounds horrible.
Horrible.
I don't want to do that. I got an interview show to do on what was it? Real? What was the? There's an old audio program that was going on back then. The original pre-podcast period. And so I was just like, I don't want to do that. What's the point of that? Meanwhile, me later in my career, I'm like, damn it, that would have been great.
That'd been fun. How great would that have been?
Yeah,
that's great stuff. Great stuff. Well, again, my condolences to you and the family, of course. You know that I've said it probably 1,000 times and sent dozens and dozens of texts already to everybody in the family. So I'm thinking of you. And hopefully anybody that's listening will show up to the Fort Lauderdale meetup on the 8th of August, 3:33 p.m. It's going to be on the beach. The location is on the registration page. It's no cost. Just come. You know, maybe so we'll give out some shirts too, probably, and some other stuff, and have some drinks. What are you saying?
If it's a beach, then people should be bringing wine from Costco.
Probably in boxes, but it's not going to be on the beach. It'll be at a restaurant on the beach. So it's not going to be on the beach. I'm a little bit classier than that.
There's a beach there.
There's right? There happens to be a beach in Fort Lauderdale, and we're right adjacent to it in a restaurant bar. With a nice big thing. We're going to have people speaking, saying things. It's going to be nice. It'll be very nice. Anyway, go over to dhunplugged.com, and on the right, top right, there's a little link that says sign me up, register, or something like that, or whatever, let me into that. So just we can have your email and then send you out a note about when it's going to happen, confirming in case location changes. Who knows? But this way, everybody knows where everything is. All right. How about we get into some of the discussion about what's going on in the financial world?
Yeah, let's do semis.
Do you want to talk about NVIDIA first? Smack right in the face,
But you're gonna say bad things about my favorite company I've worked for.
I'm only gonna just about their stock.
Yeah, but their stock only dipped for a little bit. They only got Apple only got the crown briefly.
It's still there.
Is it?
Yes, Apple's over $5 trillion. I think NVIDIA was up slightly today. Apple's up another couple of percent. It was up 3%, a dip yesterday. Today it was up a little bit. The point is that they're $5 trillion, which is a major point. I remember when the $1 trillion club was like a thing, right? Wow, they're over a trillion. Now they're over $5 trillion. It's unbelievable.
Well, if we keep printing money, we can all be trillionaires.
I hope so. Even for a short moment, as Elon Musk was, he had a great tweet the other day. He's like, he just put out former trillionaire. That's all he put is former trillionaire. That was great. So one of the big concerns right now is, I think, has been the circular financing. I've talked to this with you about this. I sent you a chart about this. I do have some issue with this. And do I think it's terminal, like everything's going to crash? No. But I think there was going to be a day, and that may be happening to a degree now, that investors are going to wake up and say, you know what? I don't know if I like this deal. I don't know if I like that NVIDIA is printing all this money, giving it out to everybody. And almost, it seems like a scene from The Producers, where all this money is being generated that we can't even account for all of it. And how is it all going to play out? All these promises. If NVIDIA is promising $3 trillion or whatever the number is, $1 trillion, doesn't matter what the number is. Yeah. How is this going to be covered? You know, is it going to be covered on the promise that things will do really well in the future? So you got that. Then you got on top of it in the markets in the last few days, the rotation clearly from semiconductors actually back to some software names, the CRM or Microsoft. Adobe got a bid, which is unbelievable. And there's that rotation going on. We're also today, here we are Tuesday, just days before the end of the month. What does that mean? Well, you got window dressing. That is a standard procedure that goes on. Perfect day to start doing it. It didn't work out really well for the semis, but everything else was. Today was actually not a bad day if you extract out the semiconductors and some tech stocks. Otherwise, it was up like 600 on the Dow. The S&P 500 was up. The Russell 2000 small cap was up. So kind of a crazy market. Crazy. And part of that was this guarantee that that NVIDIA gave to OpenAI, another $250 billion, that is going to back the Ohio data center project, which may cost like $500 billion. By the way, $1 billion is $1,000 million. Is that? Do we agree with that?
Yeah, that's right.
$1 billion is $1,000 billion. $1,000 million. That's $1 million homes equivalent. You got me so far?
Yep.
We're talking about $250 to $500 billion. Just multiply that out. It's unbelievable. That is an incredible amount of homes to be built, in theory, to build these data centers. It seems to me, maybe I'm wrong, but these data center prices have gotten out of control.
I mean, a few things to point out there. One is, so data price, there's two different aspects. One is they're buying the land and they're getting, and they have to buy the land. There's a huge amount of land here and they have to buy the premier access to the electrical grid they need. Often they have to build out a new power grid. The second one element here is that the labor is really short. They are building often in places that don't actually have the labor necessary to build it out. And so they're paying a premium on the construction. And then the last element is one chip, one of these guys,
Where are you going? What happened? Where'd he go?
One of these things,
Oh,
you
oh,
know,
oh, I got one
one
of
of
those.
the,
I just got one of those. Is that a
yeah,
Blackwell?
okay. Yeah. So the consumer product ones, you know, a couple grand. The same for like the big Blackwells and all that, you're looking at $500,000 a unit.
That's a lot of money.
And the margin is actually not as large as it looks from the outside. Because we know from the Chinese market where they're trying to enter this, they're only really coming in at like a half the price of NVIDIA. And the Chinese aren't really known for, you know, gouging. And so each of these data centers are $1 billion in chips.
Can you hold up
And
that?
they're
Can you bring that back? Can you bring the chip back and
yeah,
hold up
sure.
for the video?
Oh, this is an old RTX 3090. This
That's a
that's not an
3090?
old it's an old fashioned prop, just to point out, like,
Yeah, no,
these
I just got a new
ones.
machine and it's got the RTX 2000 in it.
Yeah.
It's not that big. It's clearly not clearly. First of all, this new rig I just got, the T2 tower, the Dell T2 tower. It was first presented to me for 5,700 for this unit. It's for my office. I'm like, I'm not spending 5,700 for my. It's not happening. It's not happening. So then what happened was that I looked online. I did a little bit more research. I got the same unit actually with the RTX 2000 and the i9 chip, which the other one didn't have, but less memory from a secondary drive, an SSD drive, and only 16, no, 32 gigabytes of RAM. And I want to up it to 64. Long story short, I built the machine exact Dell. It's exact Dell from 5,700. I bought it for 3,000.
And half the price was the RAM, right?
RAM is more money than it has been. I remember I was talking to somebody the other day. I used to pay 50 back in the day, way back in the
Yeah,
day,
back in the day.
$50 per meg, which if you
Oh,
multiply that out, it's like $1 million for what I bought.
yeah. Well, so I have a machine I haven't finished over here, and it's because when I was pricing it out, the RAM I needed was pretty much it's like $400, and that's 2 grand. And so I'm just like, well, I'm gonna wait,
Yeah.
because it's not gonna stay up. So it's actually about so the current prices per each card is they're about 18,000 per each Blackwell, and now for a full unit, you're going to get 4 to 8 on a box, and then that's one unit that you're going to have a whole rack full. You can add up to half a billion pretty easily, and that
Half a
then.
billion, 500 million, but now we're talking about 250 to 500. All I'm saying is that there's some real money being spent here.
Yes, but it's it pays itself off really fast. The margins are huge.
The margin, well, not yet. They haven't been paid off. In fact, we're wondering, that's another thing that people are wondering about, where's the payoff? You know,
So
X is losing money. SpaceX is losing money. They lost $4 billion last quarter. Still questioning whether OpenAI is making the money. They have the projection to do so. Anthropic is went up like crazy. Question is, I mean, everybody likes the Claude model, right? The Claude code, which is,
Yeah.
by the way, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great.
And the amount of human, or not the amount, the amount of humans that you don't need anymore. For example, for a long time, we're doing on DH Unplugged the show, the episode artwork. It's through an AI. And when we did it first, your dad and I were like, "That's terrible." I said, "Let's just keep doing it and see what happens."
Yeah.
It's great now. I mean, it's not even done. It's not great. It's really better. It's got a long way to being great and human, but it's great. Then you got some of the coding. I'm like, "Hey, blah, 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 I want to create this thing in a." And instead of calling my writing this whole long thing out to the programs, listen, I need this on the site, go do this, I need this form, I need this thing, I need this, whatever. You literally just type it in and then just click a couple of buttons and it does it for you. Pretty amazing. Doesn't put you out of business though.
Ah, no, I mean, it's So just to be clear on the profit model here. So DeepSeek came out with sort of the can we still say this? They opened the kimono on their entire profit model.
This is the, by the way, this is the Chinese, this is a Chinese company.
Yeah, a Chinese company. So they are probably slightly behind on the infrastructure sophistication that we have at OpenAI and Anthropic, just from my understanding from rumors and speaking with people. So DeepSeek and Kimi, the moonshot guys, they have largely talked about what their entire margin is, like what they are. And they were coming in north of 90% per each token. So, and that is with including their CapEx depreciation. And so I can assume that the margins that we're seeing in the business, the American models, which are we're Americans, so our margins are always really high. We always try to go as high as possible. Go to the no, find the no price, and then pull back a little bit. Because you can look at the prices of Claude's Opus per million tokens. It's quite high. And Moonshot comes in at like quite a bit less. And these guys are coming in, they're reporting, oh yeah, we're getting more than 90% margin on it, given our utilization and how we organize all of the infra. And I can assume that OpenAI and Anthropic have it even higher. What's destroying them is their OpEx for hiring is insane. They're paying people $1 million a year because they sort of have a cult going on where they assume, well, if we hold all the brains, no one's going to make our competitor. And so if you look at their labor expenses from what you could just back of the envelope calculate it, it's huge. And
Huge.
that's what's causing them to be so negative. They're not negative because their core business is not profitable. They're negative because they're running their business poorly by
Well,
having
and the spend,
heavy
and the
labor.
spend, and the spend for the continual build out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because they keep building out for the future. Now, NVIDIA does kind of win if they flop, even though you go, oh, they won't be paid. So they keep all those chips. And NVIDIA's pretty much the only guys who know how to sell them.
Right, because of the NVIDIA environment and programming infrastructure they have.
Yeah. So the guys who are actually in the bad deal here are the people building out. The people building out, there's two suckers going on right now. There's private credit, which is underwriting these deals that NVIDIA is paying for, because NVIDIA is not doing it out of their own pockets. They're
Correct.
doing it, they're leveraging their credit.
OPM, we call it OPM, other people's money.
Yeah, exactly. They got a ton of that. And so, and also, why wouldn't you loan money to NVIDIA? They seem to be just producing, like, sure, whatever, Jensen. Yeah, you're a genius. Here, have another trillion. Okay, so it's being underwritten, and then these companies that are building out wildly and massively and in ways that are going to invent all new regulatory rules about sound pollution and how we're supposed to manage our grid. These guys are left holding the bag if you can't get full utilization up and you overbuild, which they will. But when are they going to overbuild? It's not clear because there is less than 5% of the American market is currently even using chat. These LLMs more than once a week. Like it's very early on the demand.
I'm wondering when all of a sudden they're going to stick me with a higher cost factor for my utilization.
So think
I think it's coming.
we can thank God for China because China is single-handedly pressing down the price of all this
Right.
stuff. K3 Kimi is on par with Opus, the current Opus, and I use Kimi all the time because it is cost effective, and I have to do this for business, so I need to care about cost efficiency. And it is by far the most cost efficient model. And soon I'll be able to run it myself on Modal and save money by controlling the whole batch. But at the moment, I can't compete against their API because they just got the infra in place, and I can't get to 100% utilization. One thing that's not necessarily obvious to everyone is that the profitability of language model hosting, serving, is based on utilization. If you run it at 50% utilization, it's like running a restaurant that has like a really high lease. You just don't make any money. It's all negative. If you can get up to 80 to 90, then now it starts making a buck because you have basically a slot of space that you can run all these questions, all these queries, and all these prompts. And you're going to have to be running that all the time. And if it's empty most of the time, you're basically wasting compute. Because you're running it anyway, but you're wasting compute, so you aren't getting back the money you bought from this infra buildup. And so you need to actually run it around 70 to 90% consistently, which so far they've been very lucky, and that's been the case for the buildout guys. not always the case for these folks like Musk, who built out Grok, and people just aren't really demanding Grok that much. Grok is not. Yeah. Their Grok build out is huge, and utilization is not that high.
So what do you think, though, about this circular financing issue where we see that this is all going on? I put a chart up on DH Unplugged, the episode number 811 over on dhunplugged.com. This is kind of just, listen, you've seen this before. It's this whole circular financing loop that looks like, you know, NVIDIA is at the center of the whole thing, funding all of this, inclusive Oracle. This is some of it. Oracle and the banks are giving money to NVIDIA. SoftBank's giving money to various places. All comes back, loops back. It's one big circle jerk.
Yeah, we saw this in, I was aware of what was happening in 99, 2000. That's Lucent and Nortel's vendor financing for the telecom growth. So it's very, very
similar. What happened to those companies? I forgot.
They went up to the road to a ranch. they're having a wonderful time. They're running around. They're chasing ducks and geese and chickens.
That's about it.
they're certainly doing fine. They're doing fine. Don't worry. I mean, we are pre-bubble pop, but we're not, like, we have a bubble, obviously. That's the only reason why we have hysterical speculative growth. What we just saw in China is proof of that. China, there are no options for the Chinese market, their retailer traders, to invest in any AI because they can't invest in any markets outside of China unless they want to risk, you know, being, have a cup of tea with a police officer.
Yeah, beheaded.
No, they don't get beheaded. With Chinese model is much scarier. Basically, you're going to the grocery store, and then you're leaving to go to your car, and this white van rolls up, and it's a couple of police officers, and they go, "Excuse me, would you like to have a cup of tea?" And you go, "Well, you're not going to be like, well, read my rights. You know, you're not going to do that. You're going to go and go have a cup of tea, and they're going to sit you down in a very scary little room and go like, do you know that you did this? Do you know that we know all of this? Could you stop? Or would you like to have a second conversation?" And they're like, "No, I don't want a second chat. It's fine. I'm good."
Well, that's why, by the way, just to interrupt this, that's why the company CXMT that came out and IPO'd a couple of days ago was up 500% in its market debut.
Yes, that's because it's literally their only option. So if you want a lottery ticket on the AI, you know, choo-choo train that's going to make you so much money if you get the right bet, then your only bet is CXMT. Yes, of course. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, it's a 1 in 200 chance, maybe, or a 1 in 1 million.
So we had a small, we had the same thing. We had small float. In other words, the company just put out a little bit. They raised $8.6 billion, largest IPO of the year for Asia. But what happened, what was interesting about that, because now this thought, that was another reason a couple of days ago we saw some of the semiconductors kind of pull in a little bit, was that there's a concept that, wait a minute, maybe there's going to be competition from China here. Now, I don't think this. We have the same issue. You know, China's going to want to keep what they have over there. Like, we don't want to sell our highest level CPUs and GPUs into China, right? We're holding back on some of that, or they're not buying it at least. But now they got something. We'll see.
I don't think that's what's happening.
No,
I don't think China's going to do that at all. There's no reason for it because
just clarify. No reason for what?
There's no reason for them not to sell to us.
Oh, okay.
They might use that as a leverage to make Trump have to apologize to things, but their businesses have no interest in not selling to what is already a shortage.
But are they going to be allowed to sell in Huawei and stuff? We're like, well, you can't do that because they have, especially with these very advanced chips, they could have some kind of, we could be scared into believing that they have some kind of tracking device or some kind of other something going on where they're listening in.
If you flip that around, I think you have a valid question, which is, will our government allow us to buy?
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And the answer is not if they're cheaper. If they're the same price, I think they'll be allowed because that's so far how we've seen it play out. The cars that we can't get are cheaper than ours. The phones we can't get are cheaper than ours. The heavy machinery required for managing our transformers and like our electrical grid, those aren't cheaper than ours. We can buy them because it's just an expensive product.
Right.
So the ones that we have a large market that could be harmed, an industry that's going to be harmed by a lower margined competitor, those, we will do protectionism right now under this current White House. So that said, we need the memory. We can't build out these data centers unless we get this DRAM. So if they enter and say, hey, we're not going to let you buy Chinese DRAM, and we right now can't buy them, I can't get them for my consumer device, they can't get them for commercial devices, then you're going to risk sinking this massive bubble that is the data center trade. I think that's a very hard thing to decide on. And I hope that the president gets very good policy proposals about how to play this.
Yeah, good luck. Lots of luck on that one. Lots
Hopefully
of luck.
Maybe he reads them. Maybe he reads them.
Maybe. But what about, I want to switch gear, just stay on AI for another second, then go to some other things. But what's your take on this OpenAI's rogue breakout?
Yeah, I've had a lot of this conversation a few times. Okay, so
let's set it up. What happened? First of all, this one of their models acted outside expected controls during a testing, and basically what happened is there was a breach on a company. Was it Huggy Face? Was that the name of the company? Huggy Face.
Yeah, Huggy Face. They're actually a huge. Once they go public, buy
Huggy Face.
Yeah, Hugging Face is like a GitHub, but for weights. So it's a very similar GitHub, which I think sold for a couple billion to Microsoft. It is where we store when we're researchers and people working in AI. If you want to store and share open weights such as DeepSeek and Kimi3 and Qwen and all these and Google's Gemma and things like that, or Nemotron from NVIDIA, you store them up on Hugging Face. They provide the hosting and the distribution,
and the security.
Yes. Well.
Well, yeah, to a point. Till we get to the story. So now, there was an OpenAI model testing going on. Somehow, it took a week for anybody to figure this out, by the way. And seemingly, this is what everybody's really concerned about: is, you know, the Terminator. This is clearly that whole concern about AI becoming. I'm not saying this happened, self-aware, but doing something outside of its intended, or then again, we don't know. Was it intended? I don't know. But something's going on.
Okay, so OpenAI and Anthropic have a narrative that benefits them a lot, which is, oh my God, we're all going to die. They love it. It's great. Anthropic runs a cult around this idea, and OpenAI benefits from it because it is a lot of the valuation is based on like, oh my God. And both of them have a huge existential threat coming down the pipe, which is that they want to keep their 95 or 98% profit margin per token that they currently have, or 99.93% margin. And Chinese models and Google and potentially Facebook again are going to, and we have other open source teams that are trying to get this stuff out, are eroding that directly. They're attempting to get that down. I had a client, I can say this. Yes, I can. Okay. I have a client who moved from a $10 million install where they were paying Anthropic for their API calls, and they were able to migrate it to $100,000 a year deal by just switching over to Kimi.
Wow.
And it's all on their own hardware. It's on their own on-prem because they're an old-fashioned enterprise company, so they have an on-prem. And so they just simply moved over to it, and it's $100,000. It's exact same functionality. It's fantastic. And it's not $10 million a year on recurring revenue to Anthropic.
And this is through an API, so they get the updates of the LLMs and all that, right?
Well, no. They have the weights. It's all theirs. It doesn't go to the cloud.
Oh.
It doesn't go anywhere else. It goes local, and they're running it on their bunch of their B100s, and they're just.
Well, how does it get updates then, and gets